Brian Haney.
Which one's the biggest diva of the three?
Oh, that's definitely Brian. No hesitation on the answer.
There you go, Brian, your own engineer. We made him famous last week when he was on the show. Good morning. How are you?
That's the first and last time we'll ever put Steve Kincaid on radio. No, all good. We like to give each other a lot of grief, and he can take it as well as he dishes it out. So happy to, hear that and the banter that was going on. That was a lot of fun last week.
It was. That was a really cool idea. I'm glad you did that. We got a lot of feedback on it. I enjoyed it and had to improvise, and that's I like improvising. I'm not one that likes to go by scripts or anything like that. I'll have some bullet points for interviews, but I like to just kind of fly with it and adjust to what the person I'm interviewing says might take me in a different direction. I think those are the better interviews, and so you took us in a whole different direction last week by having the whole crew together in the vehicle, and I thought it was really cool and a lot of fun. A lot of people like that as well. So Steve, your engineer, Steve Kincaid, he is the first radio engineer to make his debut and his finale all in one appearance, because he's not going to be on the radio anymore, as you just told me. So.
It's
a new Guinness Book of World Records right there, man.
No kidding. But no, he's an amazing guy. We had a fun time out there. It was not the result we wanted, obviously, but I think we saw progress in terms of how they competed. And, you know, to be down just six, 5 minutes into the third quarter at number 17, Coastal Carolina, to be down two scores heading into the fourth, you know, that's the type of progress we're talking about. So it was a good road trip, both with the crew and in terms of Brian.
What's the biggest takeaway or takeaways that you have from that ball game? Even though it is a loss, you and I have talked about, you know, sometimes we're going to judge progress this year. It's going to be baby steps, and it might not result in 3, 4, 5 wins or being bowl eligible, but it's steps in the right direction. And it sounds to me that there were steps made in the right direction despite a loss on the road.
Yeah. So I think the biggest takeaway is the most obvious one, and that's Jason Green's really freaking fun to watch. I mean, this guy from 34 yards out, where he's falling down and keeps his balance and takes it into the end zone, from 46 yards out, when he gets to the edge, you're faster than you can say rock chalk, and he's turned the corner and he's flying to the end zone for another TD. I mean, he's just so fun to watch. And I asked Lance Leipold last night, have you ever had a quarterback with that type of acceleration? And he said, you know, I don't think I have. He said, it's one thing to be quick back at that position, quick twitch, quick in avoiding a sack, that kind of thing. It's another thing to be quick and fast. And he really does have that elite acceleration that usually running backs and wide receivers have and getting off the line. And so that was the big takeaway. Obviously, you know, we saw a little bit of progress in the run game, particularly with Devin Neal, the rookie out of Lawrence High. Felton Gardner, I think, struggled again. He only averaged about 1.9 yards a carry and had the key drop on fourth down when they tried to swing it out to him in the left flat. The return of Amari Pesicikson tells me that we're going to see Felton get used less and less. Not that he's going away entirely, but that maybe becomes a time share now. And so his days of getting 19 carries will be short-lived, going back 2 weeks ago to South Dakota. And then, you know, in terms of getting the receivers more involved, that was a positive takeaway. We saw 8 catches for Kwame Lassiter after just 2 the week before. We saw 75 receiving yards on 5 balls hauled in for Luke Grimm. And that's a guy you knew had great chemistry with Jalen Daniels, but didn't know how much time he'd been working with Jason Bean, and you know, was he going to be able to be the same factor with him as he was with his fellow sophomore JD? And sure enough, you know, we saw him as a very trusted option to Bean. So 1 week after the tight ends were heavily leaned upon and utilized, it was more the receivers game. So all those were positives offensively. Defensively, I think there were obvious struggles against the personnel of Coastal, which, you know, there's 2 or 3 guys on that offense that will probably play on someday. But now that we're about to embark upon league play and all the athletes you face week in and week out in the Big 12, it was a little bit concerning sometimes to see them get in behind the defense like they did. But we also saw a nice takeaway with Malcolm Lee getting the forced fumble that Kyron Johnson was able to get in on. And then, you know, I think there were other positives that, you know, you see Kenny Logan go out there, lead the team in tackles, place your injury, show his toughness. That's something you can build on and hang your hat on going forward. The big breakdowns happened special teams-wise with the blocked punt that led to a touchdown. There was a blocked point after try, and you know, it's amazing to think what that might have led to. And you might say, "Oh, come on, Brian, you lost by 27." But you know, if that blocked punt doesn't happen when KU goes to score early in the third quarter, you're actually up. You know, and so it's a situation where how differently is the game played the rest of the way if all of a sudden that top 25 team is feeling an immense amount of pressure at home, if all of a sudden you know they're a little bit on edge with the tables being turned on them. So it's stuff like that you got to clean up, because as Lance Leipold has very astutely pointed out, this team's margin for error is so small. They have to be the ones that win the special teams edge. They have to be the ones that always win the turnover battle. And we saw Kansas for a second straight game do a great job of not turning it over, which was awesome to see. But if any one of those swing categories goes dramatically the other way, or even narrowly the other way, KU's probably going to lose because they're still getting to a point with such a young team and a roster that's still rounding into form, where they don't have a lot of margin for error, especially on the road against a ranked team. And so, you know, to give away 8 or 9 points on special teams, because keep in mind they were chasing points later on a 2-point conversion, but there should have been a penalty call, by the way, and they didn't get it there. So you could add up 9 points they lost on special teams, but this team just doesn't have 9 points to give. So that's where, you know, you hope you tighten those things up. But those were some of the takeaways, and I think, you know, above all else, It's progress, and that's what we're looking to see in year one. The fact that they showed fight and competitiveness when at one point they'd given up 3 straight scores and the previous Kansas teams would have wilted. Instead, they march down the field, score right before the half, get a stop, head into the locker room. They come out, start the next half with a stop and another score. I mean, that's the type of get up off the mat and fight type mentality that is going to eventually win you games this season. And it may not have on Friday, but that's the exact recipe you want to see going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday here on the Sports Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. One of the things that stands out to me through the first couple of weeks, and Coach Leipold in his press conference was knocking on wood when it was referred to, and that is that, you know, in previous years, quarterbacks have been, it doesn't really matter who the quarterback is, Brian, turnovers, interceptions, fumbles, bad decisions, and right now, KU's done a really good job. I mean, yeah, they made mistakes in special teams, as you mentioned, but in regards to when they have the football in possession on offense, they're doing a good job of avoiding turning it over.
Yeah, no doubt. And we've been a little bit fortunate. There was a late throw versus South Dakota that should have been intercepted. There was the fumble early versus Coastal by Bean that could have been recovered, but we pounced on it. So it's not like we've played completely error-free, but part of the turnover game is fortune, because it's an oblong ball. Sometimes it bounces your way, and sometimes it doesn't. But it has been great to see that everything that's been so emphasized by the staff in terms of ball security and prioritizing the football, you know, it is 2 games in, yielding the type of results you would want it to. And so hopefully that continues. I'm knocking on wood right now as I'm saying that, because, again, that's the type of thing that Kansas, you know, can't afford to give away multiple possessions when you're already the perceived multiple score underdog. And so hopefully they'll continue to do a solid job with that and now start to get more takeaways. It was good to see that the 2 senior defensive ends combine on that fumble recovery that I talked about. You'd like to see the secondary get involved a little bit more. And that'll start with pressure up front, forcing some of these upcoming quarterbacks into bad throws that the secondary can feast on. But we're excited, you know, that Kansas, at least through 2 games, is doing their part in not giving it away. And hopefully the takeaways will start to come. But it's going to be tough, obviously, with a very talented Baylor team, personnel-wise, skill-wise, and all that. We can get into that here in a second. But I do think that, to your point about Kansas taking care of their own business, you can't ask for anything better than 2 weeks in and no giveaways at this point.
Well, it certainly gives you, obviously, a better chance to stay competitive, be in a ball game, and you see sometimes those mistakes just absolutely snowball. We've seen that quite a bit, more often than we would like, with KU football in past years. You're right, the Baylor game coming up, it's kind of an interesting situation. More and more schools are doing this, where they'll play a non-con or two, then they'll have their conference opener, then go back into the non-con, which is what KU will do. They'll host Baylor coming up this Saturday on Z96.3 Lake with pregame at 2 o'clock, kickoff at 2:30 there in Lawrence, and then go to Duke next Saturday. It is a little bit earlier than normal to have a Big 12 opener in a regular year. How does KU approach this one, and what stands out to you about the problems that Baylor can pose to KU?
Well, I think that it's two dynamic quarterbacks, young guys that have a lot of dual threat capability and a lot to be excited about if you're a Baylor fan or a Kansas fan, to watch Gary Bohannon and Jason Bean go back and forth. And so hopefully our guy can match their guy drive for drive. Obviously it'll be tougher, you know, considering the Bears' experience and talents and the fact that they've won 11 straight in this series. But I think, you know, to me, one of the big concerns is, you know, they torched us pretty good in the return game a year ago with a couple of kick return scores. And knowing the special teams mistakes that we saw last week, you just hope that that's not something that strikes twice. In terms of the ground attack, I'm a little concerned with Tristan Ebner, because you've seen what he's capable of, both in special teams and running the football. And he's back and off to a nice start again this year. And so those are factors. And I think Coach Leipold said it on Tuesday, and maybe he's planting a seed for a little bit of grace from his fan base, you know, as his staff works through their first year and starts to build continuity for year two. But he talked about what a difference Dave Aranda's team looks like 1 year later than what they look like on film a year ago. Because you might recall, when Kansas played Baylor a year ago, it was Baylor's very first game of the year, because they'd had multiple COVID cancellations and it ended up being their first game. And they didn't look that polished, and yet they still put it on us. And a year later, Coach Leipold says you can just see how much more in the groove, how much more understanding of the system, how much more settled in to who they are and what they're going to be. This program is, having, you know, been around these coaches for a full year, understanding expectation, understanding what they're trying to accomplish. And consequently, you know, I think that is a significant factor. And something that hopefully a year from now we're talking about that with Kansas and how much more our guys are settled in, having understood their coaches for a full 12 months. But Dave Aranda, as you might recall, is a former LSU coordinator under Les Miles briefly, and a guy that has an outstanding coaching pedigree. And I would expect, you know, to really get this Baylor program, you know, back into that 7-8 wins a season type territory. And so this is a tough one out the gates. I know some have circled this and the Texas Tech game, because they're at home, as, you know, maybe our best chances to win a conference game. Certainly K-State every year, we hope that's the case. But I think, yes, it's definitely one of the top three in our wheelhouse. At the same time, I think back to, you know, the last 5 years that I've been on the call against these guys, in most cases, they have been significantly faster, significantly deeper, significantly just more well put together. And I think we're going to have to overcome a lot to, you know, to take advantage of what our little advantages may be along the way, because they have most of them. So that's not to paint a bleak picture. I think we can go out there and absolutely stun them. But the margin of error that we talked about earlier, and winning the turnover battle, having some good things happen in special teams as opposed to giving up 9 points in special teams. You'll recall our last home game, we had an 83-yard kick return. You know, we saw the kicking game look really good. We need some of those things to be the case and be there throughout Saturday afternoon. And if that's the case, maybe you can overcome it. But to me, I think it's definitely one of those matchups where our corners will be tested. Our defense, 1 through 11, will be tested with some of the track star speed that they have on this team. And that's going to be something that you'll find out in the first quarter and a half, if this is going to be one of those games where we can stay with them or if it turns into a track meet. And I, for one, think we're going to stay with them. I think it's going to be competitive throughout.
All right, I want to change gears to one thing before we jump to the off the wall, and that is, I think this is since last time you and I spoke. Days run together nowadays for me as I get older. But what are the feelings, what are the thoughts there at KU, maybe whether it's on around campus, whether it's with coaching staffs, whatever, radio guys, whoever, in regards to the Big 12 adding Central Florida, Houston, Cincinnati, and BYU in the future? What's the feeling in the Lawrence area about that?
You know, surprisingly, not a lot of talk.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's because even though that's happened and we're excited that's happened and we're committed to the Big 12, you know, there's still one eye open on other changes in college athletics and where's going to be the most stable long-term home with the most lucrative future. Not so athletic administrators can line their pockets, but so we can continue to compete in the arms race of facilities and recruiting and all that. And that's something that remains to be seen, because even though the quantity may have gone up and we fortified ourselves with four really good athletic departments joining the mix, the overall quality in terms of national brand recognition when you lose a Texas and an Oklahoma, you know, isn't what it was. And that's just being honest. And I think Bob Bowlesby did an amazing job to get the four teams he did. You weren't going to go out and replace, you know, Texas and Oklahoma. I know you're a fantasy guy. If you lose Derrick Henry in week one, you're not going to find,
yes,
I don't know, Ezekiel Elliott on the waiver wire. You know, you just right. can't go out and replace one for one when you lose a blue chip like that. And so I think that they did the best they could, and it's encouraging. And, you know, on a future episode, when we have more time, would love to break down what I like about each of the four programs, not just in football, but all sports.
Sure.
But in the short term, I think we still understand that Travis Goff is going to do what's best for Kansas, because you have to think, when the next TV contract rolls around, are these 12 teams going to fetch as much money and generate as many eyeballs to fetch that money as a 10-team league that had Oklahoma and Texas? And
no.
The answer is probably no.
No.
And now you're dividing the pie with
smaller.
Two more teams sticking a hand out.
Yeah.
So my point is, it's not a permanent solution. It's definitely a step in the right direction, and it's certainly something that I'm excited about, because my first choice would be to stay in this league, because I'm going to miss these, you know, other nine schools that we've had a chance to get to know over the last 25 years, and in the cases of Kansas State and Oklahoma State, schools like that, clubs I grew up watching throughout my childhood at the Big 8 basketball tournament in Kansas City and all that. If some of these Big 10 rumors and speculation wound up happening with Kansas and Iowa State going off together, that's great, but there isn't, like, the same venom, obviously, toward Iowa State in any regard, and that would be the only, you know, previous Big 8 team you'd be keeping anything alive with.
Yeah.
And your top two rivals of Mizzou and K-State, sure, you can reschedule them for the non-con, but it doesn't have the same passion or intensity in that regard.
Yeah.
So let me be clear. I'm a huge proponent of keeping it together. I just hope now their next big challenge, and the toughest of them all, is making it work financially and getting the type of contract in return, TV dollars, that is, that keeps us somewhere similar to where we've been. That's going to be a mountain of a challenge without Oklahoma and Texas. And so that's why, you know, it's a happy day for sure, but it's not a, well, this solves everything type solution, because those plates are going to be shifting underneath us for a while now,
mm-hmm.
In terms of what the new college athletics is going to look like.
No, I totally agree with everything that you're saying. And the other thing, too, that I said for a long time, and I've not been that mad about at Texas or Oklahoma for choosing to do what they did, because if any other school that's left in the Big 12 or the new teams coming in, new schools coming in, if they had a chance to get another $20 to $25 million per year, they all would have said yes, and they wouldn't even thought that long about it. So I everybody's got to do what's best for their individual institution. That's what my point is. Yes, you want to stay together as much as you can in a conference, but I agree. It's just like anything in life. You, even a job opportunity, you might be happy at your job, but you always have your ears open, your eyes open and peeled just in case there's some great opportunity that pops up that you maybe didn't even anticipate. And that's the way life is. And I don't think it should be any different in regards to people running academic or school institutions like this. You got to do what's best for you first, and then maybe the conference comes second. I think that makes total sense.
Yeah, I think so too, and it's frustrating because it puts, you know, eight colleagues, eight you know, peers in terms of the institutions and the ADs and all that in jeopardy.
Sure.
But knowing that changes were coming in college athletics as a whole and trying to get out in front of it, you could see why they acted proactively and took that invitation when they did. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you know, we're talking about other schools doing the same eventually. But for now, you know, in the wake of that, it's good to see the united front that the other eight had, and then the way that our leadership in the conference, you know, stepped up and took a proactive approach in their own right. It was the best case scenario, I think, of what they could have done. And so let's, you know, celebrate that for what it's worth, but know that there's also, you know, bigger battles to fight now and terms of the financial viability of the league going forward, and hopefully they'll win those battles too.
It's ever-changing climate, that's for sure. All right, time for the off-the-wall question with Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks. Norm MacDonald passed away the other day. I always enjoyed Norm MacDonald on Saturday Night Live and did a lot of great stuff on movies. It was Adam Sandler in movies, and he passed away after a battle with cancer, a nine-year battle with cancer. And so last week, it's odd enough that I asked you what your favorite Adam Sandler movie was for all you guys, because Adam Sandler had a birthday last Thursday. He was 55. Norm MacDonald and Adam Sandler were really good friends and worked together on Saturday Night Live. So it's a very similar question for you this week, except that I'm asking, what is your favorite Burt Reynolds movie? And the reason I bring that up is one of the most well-known impressions that Norm MacDonald did was Burt Reynolds on Celebrity Jeopardy. So what's your favorite Burt Reynolds movie? And you have a quick memory of Norm MacDonald, because that's a guy I grew up with, that he was an acquired taste as a comedian, but I liked his stuff. And he wasn't afraid to push the envelope, and that's what I liked about him.
Yeah, I think my biggest memories with him would have been on the Weekend Update.
Yes.
News desk.
Yes.
Because he did other stuff, but that was probably his most notable role, and you know, had a very unique delivery and stick there, which
yes.
was you know, certainly, as you said, an acquired taste, but once you acquired it, you really enjoyed it. You know, thinking back to Burt Reynolds, I've never seen The Longest Yard to this day, and as a sports person, I should probably make that a priority, especially during football season. But I've not seen it, so I'm not going to give you that answer.
Okay.
But I'm trying to think. Did he do, like, Mr. Baseball or something like that?
That was Tom Selleck, wasn't it? Wasn't that Tom Selleck?
Tom Selleck. Okay, I confused the mustaches.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I'll help you out a little bit. Cannonball Run, I like the first one. Smokey and the Bandit, I like the first one. I didn't like the sequels as much. Boogie Nights, he was older, and that was a really good movie he was in. And then there's one that it's not even a greatly rated movie, but I thought he was pretty good in Stroker Ace. So those are a few that I like.
How old are you, Wade?
I'm a little bit older than you.
I was going to say, I thought we were the same age.
Yeah.
Like your cinematography, like cachet of movies pre-1980s is like so vast compared to mine, and clearly I have poor taste and I'm watching all this modern stuff, because I hadn't seen any of those except for Boogie Nights. So you're gonna have to just expand my horizons and my palette here for the vintage classic stuff, because I thought we were pretty similar age. You clearly have seen way better, way more classic films than I have.
I apparently had more free time at some point in my life, so I actually saw, like, Cannonball Run was on TBS. They'd replay them on TBS syndication, and Smokey and the Bandit. And I think that's where I watched those when I was in college. Those would be on, like, TBS or something. And so I came across those. I actually watched Cannonball Run a long, long time ago, I think, when I was younger. Maybe that was in high school, and that was one that just kind of stood out to me. They're silly, but they were still good. So you're making me feel old at the same time I'm trying to say that I didn't watch them when they first came out in the cinema, Brian. Okay, I watched them a little later on.
You know, fitting that the guy that supposedly looks like Tom Cruise would have such a great classic film knowledge base to pull from. So.
Next
I'll
week,
you
you're
sliding around in the kitchen in your socks, and having your risky business back there and put out the employee, my man.
Next week, off the wall, your favorite Tom Cruise movie. There we go. We'll just lock it in. All right.
Sounds good.
Thanks. Thanks, my man. Always appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, bud. Have a good one.
You too. Brian Hayden, the voice of the Jayhawks. We always have a lot of fun with him. Brian's appearance here on the Sports Ticket brought to you each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boyd, or call them at 738-5701. For the record, I'm a few years older than Brian. I think I'm 4 years older than Brian, maybe 4 or 5, somewhere in that range. So I'm a little bit older, but not way older. I am surprised he hasn't seen maybe a few of those Burt Reynolds movies because they are in syndication quite a bit. I remember, I think, even in college, and that's how I came across a few of those. And there's many Burt Reynolds movies that I haven't watched and some that I probably don't need to, some that were really good that I should. But we appreciate Brian Haney being on with us. As always, the voice of the Jayhawks every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency there in Beloit.